Thank you. Okay. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce our main speaker, Julie A. from the Bay Area.
I thought we were going to thank a hell of a lot more people, so woo, here I am. Did we start with a serenity prayer? Yeah, we did, and I was just blanking out, right? Okay, figures. Okay, so I do have my glasses, so there's a plus. If I start, getting too fuzzy with this thing or whatever. I'm not used to holding a mic and talking at the same time. I usually like to wave around both hands, so we'll see how it goes. But I want to thank the committee because it makes me look humble. I want to thank the committee for asking me to come and share at the closing when everybody is burnt out, tired, full, and their butt is dead. So thank you for that. Not really. It's actually, I know that, you know that. It's an honor and a privilege, and I want to stress very highly that I am simply a member, and that's it. I am a member who got tapped, okay? That's all. I am not a spokesperson for Overeaters Anonymous. I know I am not anything other than a member, and all I'm here to do today is to share with you my experience. My story, okay, experience, strength, and hope, what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. But I do want to thank the committee because I listen to CDs a lot, and one of them is from a woman who said, a good conference is like a good orgy. When it's all over, you really don't remember who made you feel good. Which, of course, is a very appropriate joke for Sunday morning. But the main reason why I wanted to thank the committee and everybody who showed up here, because trust me, if you go to all this work and nobody comes, it's not much fun, is to say that everybody in this room today has fulfilled OA's responsibility pledge. It's in our tools of recovery. Always to and I hope I can get through ever since I turned 50, I just cry at everything. Okay. Always to extend the hand and heart of OA to all who share my compulsion. For this, I am responsible. So thank you, everybody. That's really important to me. So I have pictures. And would somebody be willing to come up and just grab these and start passing them? I'd like those back because I really don't want to do that again. Okay, so please, I'd like it back. I'll just start with the basic statistics. And if you're like me, you have a bad attitude. I had a bad attitude when I got here. Whenever I would go to OA events and they'd say it's a $5 suggested donation, I'd pay $2.50. And then if I liked the speaker, I'd pay him maybe a couple more bucks. But I want to know I'm getting my money's worth before I pay you anything. And so I'm sorry about this. And it was, coming to one of these was terribly terrifying. Who are these people? We're kind of nuts, if you haven't noticed. So the statistics, all right, and a disclaimer. I listen to, a lot of CDs, and there's a lady who says that curse words are for conversational cripples. And sometimes I walk with a limp. And that's true for me. Okay, so if I say anything that offends you, believe me, that is not my intention. But sometimes I walk with a limp. And I've been in Overeaters Anonymous since about 1981. And I have been abstaining as of July 1st of 2015 for 30 years. That's my story in a nutshell. Okay. I came in on a Monday in January. Where else would you start a diet? Monday, January. Okay. And my top weight in this program has been about 200 pounds, but I quit weighing after a certain point because, I mean, do you really need more bad news? And then my bottom weight in this program was 98 pounds. And I've been everything in between. And so I just came from an absolutely fabulous workshop on sober eating, and it was terrific. And when I say what my abstinence is, I found that if you've ever been to a dog show, and we have a really great one at the Cow Palace in Northern California, and when they do the obedience trials, when the German Shepherd comes up to do his, you know, agility course, they set the bar pretty high for that dog. And when the dachshund shows up to do his ability trials, they do not leave the bar that high. They drop it for the dog because there's nothing wrong with that dog, but let's be real. And so for me, in setting an abstinence, this kind of goes along with my story. In that, in trying to figure out what my abstinence was, I kind of had to drop the bar. Only because, and my abstinence is this, no refined sugar in the form of cakes, cookies, candies, all the, that, you know, crack. And no binging. Now, that's a big, wide territory. And frankly, what I do on a daily basis is weigh and measure my food. That's what I do. That helps me. I want to really stress that I'm simply sharing with you what I found helps me. If weighing and measuring makes you want to put a gun to your head, I'm not here to, you know, push for anything. In fact, I used to hear people say in the meeting that the longer they were here, the less they knew. And I thought, well then why the hell come? And the truth is, the longer I'm here, sometimes it feels like the less I know. Because I used to be dead sure of things at 90 days. And yet at the same time, certain truths are reinforced year after year after year. So right now I weigh about 120. Now, I'm talking about that because at one time in the last couple years, I never thought I would get anorexic again. And it was very insidious, just like overeating. I just got a little thinner and a little thinner and a little thinner, and I'm okay, and I just need to work out at the gym more so I can put on a little muscle. And a lot of people were coming up to me and saying, "You're too thin," which I appreciated their honesty. And I, inside my head, I smiled and I nodded my head, and inside I thought, fuck you. Because when I've been fat all my life, don't tell me I'm too thin. And the truth is I was too thin, because there's a real high that comes from losing weight. Look, I lost weight. Look, I lost weight. Look, I lost weight. And then it's like, and there's that illusion of control. I can make myself finally lose weight. The problem is there's no end to that. And at 109, it was clear I'm too thin. And what got my attention was not the people in OA, but a doctor who said, "You have osteoporosis and you have no bones and you have to go up in weight and you have to," and I can't tell you how hard that was. Now, normally that would be a dream come true, right? You have to gain weight. Okay, I know how to do that. But it's not the "and anything goes." It's the "in a concerted, healthy way." It was really hard to do. So I'm just saying that. But I'm 120, which is about what the doctor said. That's okay. You know, so I'm good with that. Basically, I grew up I was an obese baby. I have pictures. I was literally an obese baby. My mother fed me a lot of juice. And because she just said, oh, she just likes it. Well, of course. And so I've been raised on sugar most of my life. And I was an obese baby. I've been a fat kid. I was the kid that the school nurse, when they would do the weigh-ins, you know, the person taking the numbers is at the back of the room. You weigh up at the front of the room. They call out your weight across the room. You know, we're talking in the 1960s in elementary school. And the nurse would bend down and say, honey, don't you think you should lose a little weight? And I would always think, what are you talking about? Now, in my house, everybody ate ice cream. The dog ate ice cream. The dog even had diabetes, okay? You know, in my house, it's like diabetes and hypoglycemia run in the family, and so does obesity, that, and alcoholism. And so it was like, you know, I didn't get it. What do you mean? What do you mean? And I was kind of a semi-active kid, so I was on the heavy side or normal, whatever that means. But it was always an issue. My first diet was the age of five or seven. And I remember the days of Seago and Metrical. We were a hearty group. You can get that down your throat. Let me tell you, you want to lose weight. Because, you know, Fresca with no NutraSweet, carbonated horse pee in a bottle, okay, with a fresh lemon scent. So it was a tough time, man, you know. And then I would make up my own diets because I hit puberty, and boy, you know, I just gained weight. I suddenly grew out of all my school clothes. And my mother, who'd been teased all her life, when she brought my lunch to school one time, the kids in the classroom all looked out the window and said, who's that fat lady? That's my mother. What do you mean? She's not fat. She's just my mom, who likes to wear a lot of muumuus. And it's like, but so what? You know, we're in Southern California. It's balmy. Well, you know, they're Hawaiian. But so all my life, everybody in my family, we all struggled with weight. Okay, it was a big, fat, hairy deal. And then in junior high, I put myself on diets that usually consisted of things like eat nothing all day and eat peanut butter all night, or control your urge to eat with bubble gum. This explains why I have a lot of metal in my mouth, okay? And the thing I want to share with you is that I love this book. I was raised on Alcoholics Anonymous literature. That is the backbone of my recovery. But this book, in step two, it says, when we look with complete honesty at our lives, we see that we're eating was... Oh, who's the timer, by the way? Raise your hand. Goody. Thank you. Okay. We've acted in an extremely irrational and self-destructive manner. Under the compulsion to overeat, many of us have done things no sane person would think of doing. Now, that's where they lose me. Because to me, this all reads as sane. Okay. We've driven miles in the dead of night to satisfy a craving for food. I have to say this because I'm in L.A. and you guys will understand. I say this anywhere else, people go, huh? I drove from Whittier to West Los Angeles for a piece of cheesecake. And this is in the days where you actually could get to Whittier in West Los Angeles in less than 24 hours. Okay. I have gone to meetings up and down the San Fernando Valley. You used to be able to go to Riverside at an OA day in OA at Thanksgiving and still get home before Christmas. Okay? Anyway, it says, we have driven in the dead of night to satisfy a craving for food. We've eaten food that was frozen, burnt, stale, or even dangerously spoiled. And I just go, what? Huh? You know, it's like, well, of course you eat it. We've eaten food, you know, that whole thing where you find something in the sofa, you don't know what it is, but you pop it in your mouth so you can figure out. Now, what was that? Is that a jelly bean from two Easters ago? Was that a Cheerio from last year, you know? But I guarantee you, at 50 paces, anybody in here could spot an M&M on this carpet. I worked at a law office where this woman was eating pretzels. Now, we're talking a carpeted surface. She dropped one. She picked it up. She put it in the trash. And I just thought, I will never talk to you. a dear friend of mine likes to say that the floor is merely a larger serving surface. Yeah, you know, and I learned on my own about putting the contraband wrapper into the acceptable wrapper and throwing it in the trash. Okay, maybe you hadn't figured that one out. It says we've eaten food off of other people's plates. And the cracks me up too, dangerously spoiled. In my house, the only thing that spoiled was iceberg lettuce, literally. Our garbage disposal, which was put in like 1946, was in pristine condition. Nothing went down that sucker. Nothing. We've eaten food off other people's plates. How do you clear a plate? Off the floor, as I've said, off the ground. Now, that's the only time it gets, and to this day, I was eating with another compulsive overeater, and a rather largest chunk of chicken fell off my chicken salad onto the floor, and I looked up at her, and she looked at me with that, I'm so sorry, you know? And I nevertheless picked it up and thought, now do I pull the move where I tuck it under the plate, wait till she's not looking, and then flick it back on the plate? Do I really throw it away in a moment of pure spirituality? Or do I just call my sponsor after the meal and complain about the chicken piece I didn't get? So it says that we've dug food out of the garbage and eaten it. That was one of those things that helped get me to Overeaters Anonymous and keep me in Overeaters Anonymous, is I would say, I'm never going to eat any more of this fill-in-the-blank again. And I'm one of those people that kept whole cakes in their closet, cookie dough under their bed. I mean, you know, M&Ms in my purse for quick energy value, you know, one-pound bags. I mean, I went, God, I had this seminar one time at the May Company, if anybody remembers the May Company, and the lady had a bag about this, you know, small size bag, and she ate half of it and then rolled it up and put it in her purse. And I just thought, I can't work at the May Company. And it says we've lied about what we've eaten. Well, yes. You know, what am I going to say? I ate everything. I went in your cupboards while you weren't around, you know. And I you know, we make people scared, actually. I remember eating at somebody's house, and they had blueberry muffins, and I had one. And then I had two. And I thought, okay, like a drinker, how many did you have? Two? You know, I thought two sounded social. So then when they went out on the patio, I said, I have to use the restroom. And I went through, and on the way through the kitchen, I grabbed another muffin, ate it in the bathroom, flushed the toilet just to go with the realism, and then came back out and sat down. Now, I did this four times. And at the fourth time, they were very concerned. Are you okay? And it's like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm good. It says we've lied about what we've eaten, lied to others because we didn't want to face the truth about ourselves, stolen food from friends, family, employers. Well, what are they for? As well as from the grocery store, stolen food to buy, you know, stolen money to buy food, eaten beyond the point of being full, beyond the point of being sick. That's right. I don't eat till I'm full. I eat till it's gone, period. You know, I eat like a wino drinks. And when I first came in this program, I got really, really thin. I used to go to the meetings at Idaho in West Los Angeles. And because some person from West Los Angeles came and talked out in Whittier, and she said, she had this great meeting. And I said, well, where is it? She goes, it's in West LA. And I go, oh, that far? And she goes, well, what lengths are you willing to go to? And I thought, well, F you, I'm going for a year. And I did. I went for like 2 years. And what I didn't realize was that people who were very, very thin were anorexic. I thought that was a goal weight. Okay? I really did. I was, you know, birth weight equals goal weight. That's what I'm shooting for. And I got really, really thin. And then what happened was I didn't work the steps. It's recommended you work the steps. They are in English. But I, you know, couldn't do it. So I began compulsively overeating at Noe Retreat after a year and a half of abstinence, weighing about 98 pounds because I just kept losing weight, thinking I would eventually feel like people who work the steps felt. Okay? I mean, I did work the steps, kind of. Step one, all right, I admit I'm fat. Step two, all right, I think this can help. Step three, I'm going to turn my life and will over the care of God in the privacy of my living room as long as nobody's looking, and we're not going to talk about it again. And those were my first three steps, and when I got to four, I couldn't figure it out. It was in English, but I couldn't figure it out, and I didn't have sponsors who'd work the four steps, so what am I going to do? I went to an OA retreat. I began compulsively overeating there. Why? Because the scale had become my God. I didn't have any effective mental defense against that first compulsive bite, and I hadn't taken any inventory, so I hadn't cleaned house. Clean house, have a higher power, work with others. Well, guess what? I was working with others. I think God will forgive me for that later. And I began compulsively overeating at an OA retreat. This makes the other retreat slightly nervous, but it was okay. I then went home and went from 98 to 200 in less than 3 months. And, you know, now normally I don't even get that response. Normally it's like, oh, is that all? You know, you piker, what do you mean? You know, and that's the truth, you know. And here, that's the, you know, most people, you know, tell that to normal folks. Because they get scared for you. And for 2.5 years, what it felt like was, is I climbed up a tall ladder. I went to the end of the diving board. I did it once, twice, and then I dived into a pool with no water. And for the next 2.5 years, and I'd heard in meetings, I ate, but I got right back on. And what happened to me was right back on came 2.5 years later by the grace of God. But I gained weight, like, you know, I was working at an amusement park where they had uniforms, and I was wearing a 4. I came back the next day, I was wearing a 6. I came back the next day, I was wearing, well, I skipped 8 and went right to 10. By the time I was through, and this is in the summertime, I was wearing a uniform that I couldn't zip up the back, so I had to wear a black sweater in June, July, and August in Southern California here. You know, 102 temperatures, and I'm wearing a black wool sweater, hoping nobody notices, okay? So that's where my eating took me. I would go to church parking lots and park and binge because that's the closest I could get to God. Okay? And so what I'm going to share with you is quickly a little bit out of the big book because to me this is what sums it up. It says that we know that while the compulsive overeater may keep away from food as we do for months or years, well, seconds or minutes, they react much like normal people. We are equally positive that whenever they take any alcoholic foods into their system, something happens both in the bodily and mental sense, which makes it virtually impossible for them to stop. The experience of any compulsive eater will abundantly confirm this. And it says, these observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never first took the first bite. It's like, I can't stop once I start, and I can't stop from starting. Okay? And it says that if we never took the first bite, we wouldn't set that terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the compulsive overeater centers in his mind rather than his body. I think it's body and mind. I have an allergic reaction to certain foods. Thank you. I have an allergic reaction to certain foods. And I knew that coming in the door, but when I got in the program, and I just kept coming back, even though I was eating. In fact, it was the only time I wouldn't be eating. And I would get sometimes 3 months or 6 months or whatever. And it says that for most compulsive overeaters, for reasons yet obscure, we've lost the power of choice in food. And our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We're unable at certain times to remember the bring into our consciousness, you know, the pain and humiliation of a week ago or a day ago. And it's like, that's so true. A week ago or a day ago. And then since this is about happy destiny, I reread Vision for You. And in here it says, we awake to the terrible four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. Anybody in this room knows exactly, you don't have to look it up in a dictionary, you know what that means. You know what that means. And so I kept coming back, and then I met my sponsor who gave me the beginning of a program. And by this time I was in AA and OA. I only say that because I found it difficult to work the steps and smoke dope and drink. So I'm just saying, you know, for me, I kind of had to get rid of both those things. And And this is what I look like in an AA meeting. I would be smoking one cigarette, have one in the ashtray. I would have a diet soda, a cup of coffee, and I would be chewing bubblegum while I sugarless bubblegum while I was smoking. And as far as I was concerned, that was Olympic style recovery. Because when you're coming off sugar, baby, anything I can do to not eat sugar is okay with me, which my sponsor said included masturbation, but then how many times can you do that? So, especially at work. Makes it tough. So, but anyway, so I got a sponsor. I began working the steps. I learned in the first year of recovery, going to lots of meetings, and I still go to meetings. I average about 5-6 meetings a week. Not all of them are OA because I'm in more than one program. Lucky me. But I am, and they all help me. Okay? They all help me. In fact, I'll say this honestly. Almost every person I've sponsored, I've sent to another program. In other words, you need OA and. And I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying it was clear that the other stuff they were doing was impeding their recovery in Overeaters Anonymous. Okay, so I'm going to quit looking at the book. I'm just going to tell you. I don't know why I got abstinent. Okay, I used to do things like I'm driving down the freeway. I'm putting cream cheese on a bagel with a sharp, like, you know, Swiss Army knife. I'm driving a stick shift. And it's raining. Okay. And my last binge, I couldn't go to an OA meeting. I was too ashamed. I went to an AA meeting. They thought I'd gotten drunk. I said, no. I just ate a pound of bread and a loaf of bread and a pound of butter. And they're like, okay. But one person talked to me, and they said, you know, why don't you try just lightening up on you? In other words, what they said to me was, I love you exactly the way you are, and I wish you could too. And the only way I can do that is when I am not eating. I'm sorry. I'm just not one of those people that can be 100 pounds up on my weight and love myself. The disease voice is too loud for me. And I can share that while I was trying to abstain, and it ain't easy, you know, I would go to meetings and every cell in my body was screaming, eat something, goddammit. And, you know, and people are happy, joyous, and free. And you just want to slap the out of all of them. And then one day I'm walking through the mall with my then boyfriend, now husband, and we're looking at these, you know, cute girls. And I'm just thinking, I am never going to look like that. I am never going to look like that. And I got home, and you take a shower, and I'm looking at my body, and I'm just thinking. And a voice in my head said, if you abstain today, this too shall pass. And I abstained that day, and it has passed. Okay? So in the last 30 years, it's been an adventure. Thank you. I'm sorry to take so long. Is there anybody here who's new? Anybody at all? No. One. Two, three, four. Okay, great. I apologize to spend so long on the what it used to be like, but here's why. Because standing before you is a person who weighs 120 pounds now, and it's not because I'm starving. And because of this program, I was able to go back to school and get a degree sober from food. The first one I got, I was so ashamed because I ate and cheated my way through school. I did not even go and pick up my diploma. They mailed it to me. And in this program, I was able to get a master's degree and show up abstinently. I was able to get married abstinently. Well, you have to come to a program to find someone sick enough to marry you. And I did. And, I mean, he was on parole, but so what? You know, he knew the big book, so you know, here's my phone number. So I've been able to stay married because of this program. I've been able to do jobs because of this program. I currently have a job where I work with adults with disabilities, and this is the best job I ever had. If you are a sponsor of anyone in this room, it is all the training you need to work with adults with disabilities. Serious. I have problems with my emotions. They have problems with their emotions. I had problem with my medication. They have problems with their medication. They have a hard time facing life on life's terms. So do I. Okay? So in the 5 minutes we have left, I just want to share one thing. What, 2 minutes, right? 2 minutes?
Three.
Whoa. Okay. So I just want to say that. I can't begin to tell you all the ways in which Overeaters Anonymous has impacted my life, and that I still have problems, and I still have problems with food, okay? It's gotten to a point now, as I've gotten older, where I can't eat as much as I want to or as much as I used to, and my head's still saying, you can eat that much, and my body's going, no, you really can't. And so we're in this, you know, teeter-totter, and I'm having to turn a lot more to other people in the program and to a higher power. It's like, you can't do this for me, I can't do this by myself, and I know I can't do it without a higher power in this program and using the tools. And I would much rather recover alone in my room and not talk to you, but I have to do that. So I'm going to read a quote from a guy named Pedro Arrupe, who was, thank you, he was in Hiroshima when they dropped the bomb as a missionary. And I'm going to read it the first time as he read it, and then I'm going to read it a second time. It says, nothing is more practical than finding God, that is, falling in love in a quite absolute final way. What you are in love with, what seizes your imagination, will affect everything. It will decide what will get you out of the bed in the morning, what you will do with your evenings, how you will spend your weekends, what you read, who you know, what breaks your heart, and what amazes you with joy and gratitude. Fall in love. Stay in love. And it will decide everything. Now, this is the way I read it. Nothing is more practical than finding OA if you're a compulsive overeater. That is, falling in love. And by the way, notice how it doesn't say skipping in love, dancing in love, falling in love. In a quite absolute, final way. We have a turbulent relationship, OA and I, but I'm real clear it saved my life, and it's put people in my life who love me. So it says, what you're in love with, what seizes your imagination, will affect everything. OA has decided what gets me out of bed in the morning, what I do with my evenings, how I spend my weekends, what I read, who I know, what breaks my heart, and what amazes me with joy and gratitude. Those last two lines have to do with sponsorship, in my opinion. Fall in love, stay in love, and it will decide everything. I didn't know about love when I got here, and it has been a slow, gradual process. But as another person I heard said, love is spelled H-E-L-P. We reach out our hands for help. And I want the hand of OA to always be there. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Now I'd like to welcome Tina and her crew from Region 2 to come up.
Hi, I'm Tina, compulsive overeater. Sorry. I'm the Region 2 chair for the 2016 convention, and woohoo! And we're so excited about that. And what we did is we have left some information on your seats. So here's a save the date postcard for you to take back to your meetings. Our convention is coming up at the end of June, June 24th through 26th, and it's at the Crown Plaza Hotel in lovely Milpitas, California. That's just, yeah. You know Milpitas? Okay, not everybody does, and it's near San Jose. So it'd be great to see you there. There's also a registration form. Our registration is online, so we're real excited about that at the Region 2 website. So come on down. And we do have T-shirts, so we're showing our T-shirts for sale in the back here. And we have the blue color, soft blue and soft green. And so those are there, and they're $20. And we have dog tags. So cute little dog tags. Yep, barf, barf, in the back. And they have the Serenity Prayer on them, and on the back is blank. And I heard a great idea. Somebody said you can have your abstinence date engraved on it, so that's kind of cool. So those are $10 if you're interested in that. And what we'd like to do is our theme is Joyful Journey, Stepping into Freedom. And we just love that theme. And one of our members came up with this idea to have a song. And so on your seats, there's a white pamphlet. If you could go ahead and pull that up. And what we would like to have everybody do is stand up, please, with this, because we're going to sing together, Stepping into Freedom. This is to the tune of Taylor Swift's Shake It Off, except we are going to step it up. Oops. Is Jeff? Hi, Jeff. We thought we had this worked out, but
I'm going to help you out.
These guys are great. Oh, my God.
There.
Huh. All right. He's going to help us figure it out.
All right. There you go.
Okay.
Sorry, you just have to. But go out of it all together or it won't restart on you. Remember, it'll start in the middle again. So
how do I do that?
Do this and we make it.
Sorry, I know you gave me this lesson.
That's
he's really
right.
Great.
I want to make it go away.
Uh huh.
There we go. Now make it come back.
Okay.
And you're good to go.
Hey, Jeff.
Yay, Jeff.
Too late, got nothing in my brain, that's what people say, that's what people say, I go on too many dates, but I can't make them stay, at least that's what people say, that's what people say, but I keep cruising, can't stop or stop moving.
Step it up, step it up. Step it up, step it up. I never walk alone. So shine, hope is there. Shine, hope is there. My journey on the steps.
Play, 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 and my head is gonna hey, 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 baby. I'm just gonna.
it down low. Those Canadians who look like they've never had a weight problem in their life, come along with us on this joyful journey in 08. Step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it. Dog tags are in the back table with the t-shirts. Thank you, everybody.
Oh, whose phone is this?
Mine.
I could have texted all your friends with something naughty, and I would have, given the time. So I would like to introduce Miss Naomi, who you've seen. She is our splendid, what are you, co-chair?
Yeah.
She's awesome. Michelle's always thanking us. I want to take a minute to thank Michelle, our chair, who is awesome. Thank you, Michelle, for everything. She's not just a great leader. She's a great friend. She's worried about what the rest of the chairs need, and that just means a lot. So thank you. A couple announcements before we do the raffle. If you feel